President Trump tweeted today, "The Freedom Caucus will hurt the entire Republican agenda. We must fight them." More fallout from the failure of the Republican health care bill, which the Freedom Caucus opposed. And a reminder that even when a president's party controls both houses of Congress, getting things done isn't simple. For a look back at the history of one-party rule, let's go to Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome back. And Nathan, start with this idea of one-party rule. You'd think it would be easy to get things done.
No, not at all. I mean, part of the thing that happens, I think, when you focus on, you know, one party versus another is you tend to basically overlook the fact that there are a lot of other factions and interests within the party structure that aren't simply represented by a D or an R, in our case of the 20th or 21st century. Right? You have countervailing interests in business. You have people who are lobbying as workers groups. You have all kinds of interest groups that are basically exerting influence. And in the case of this recent healthcare concern, you know, there were all kinds of groups that the Republicans simply thought they would get to sign on, be they doctors or formal medical lobbying groups that simply weren't on board with the Ryan Trump plan. And so I think it's really important that when we think about one-party rule, such as we want to call it, that there are a variety of different interests that get buried by that notion of there being simply one party in charge.
Is that because when a party is big enough to have those kinds of majorities, they probably do have a lot of different factions in them?
That's exactly right. You do have a two-party system here. So in order to get past the finish line, to get that 51%, if you will, you've really got to put together a lot of coalitions. And really, there's been no time in American history where a majority party in Congress really didn't have a number of factions.
Well, one leader who, it seems like as you look back, was able to get things done with his majorities is FDR.
Right.
But certainly FDR at the beginning of his administration, right? When I turn on CNN, I see the first 100 days. Well, where does that come from? That comes from FDR because he got so much legislation passed.
Right.
Of course, he was in the middle of a, well, catastrophic economic crisis. There was a lot of pressure. Another leader who got a lot of things done with the same party as Lyndon Johnson. But in both cases, they ran into some, let's call them headwinds from their own party.
Like what?
Well, I think one of the chief blockers of those agendas under Roosevelt and under Johnson were, of course, Southern Democrats, right? So if you think about the so-called one-party South, I mean, you want to talk about the hazards of one-party rule, just look at the Jim Crow era and see all the things that can happen when you have Democrats in charge of, you know, state and local politics as well as, you know, the governor's houses. But even there, in the heart of the Jim Crow era, there is remarkable diversity of thought. There's deep infighting. You think about conflicts over labor, over whether or not African Americans will have the right to vote, over what urban development will look like. All of this stuff is really the product of pitched battles within these various southern states. So what we think of as the kind of solid South, that agenda of states' rights, of right to work, all of those issues are actually the result of very bitter infighting at the state and local level that, again, we tend to miss when we just think about kind of one-party rule or even the New Deal as a program.
Yeah. And even at the – to go back to the national level, Nathan – I mean, Roosevelt got involved in Democratic primaries in 1938 because he saw people like Maury Maverick in Texas, who was a progressive. He saw Lyndon Johnson, who had
Claude Pepper in Florida.
Leanings. He saw Claude Pepper in Florida. And he said, yeah, listen, if we're really going to promote economic development, progressive programs in the South, we need more people like this. He intervened and he got his clock cleaned, to use
a radio-friendly
term.
I'm so glad that you just brought up Maury Maverick because it just reminded me that we were doing the show from San Antonio a couple of years ago and ended up at the Maverick family reunion with dozens and dozens of Mavericks, and it's that family, and they do believe that they are Mavericks, the way that we would use the term Maverick.
They are Mavericks in every sense.
What a fun party. Anyway, let's talk about Republicans and how they have handled one-party rule, because we've been talking about FDR and LBJ. What about Republicans?
Well, in the 20th century, they've had fewer opportunities for one-party rule. But we can go back to Eisenhower. he carried Republicans into the majority in the 1952 election. But he, too, really struggled with this because his majority in both the House and the Senate was paper thin. And the obstacle that Eisenhower faced was a guy who you may have heard of, Joseph
McCarthy. Is that
McCarthy.
Joe McCarthy?
That was Joe McCarthy. And he was just a pain in the neck for Eisenhower. Now, they were both Republicans. And in fact, when the Republicans became the majority in the Senate, McCarthy got a lot more power. He was made the chair of a committee. He got a staff, which included people like Roy Cohn, who went on to advise Donald Trump, as a matter of fact. Mm. But McCarthy was literally tearing down the government with his witch hunts and attacks and charges that there were communists in the State Department. Eisenhower hated McCarthy. But you know what? He did not publicly move against McCarthy, because if he did, it would have destroyed his paper-thin majority in the Republican Party. It would have just torn it apart, Jeremy.
As we look back at the last few presidencies, I do note that every single one of them, going back to President Clinton, has had a period of his presidency with one-party rule, including President Clinton, who was not able to get through Hillary Care, right?
That's right. I mean, Clinton came into office with Democratic majorities in both chambers of the 103rd Congress, right, the House and the Senate. And even though he only won, you know, 43% of the vote, he used that term, mandate, as a way to basically justify a pretty ambitious agenda, right? I mean, the idea, of course, was that he was going to try to insure all Americans. He was going to try to require employers to buy health insurance for their workers. The first problem, of course, was that the bill itself ended up being over 1,300 pages. But then there was a bigger problem, right, where in all this talk about mandate, it again, you know, concealed the fact that there were a variety of different interests who were already inside of the Democratic Party. So you think about, for instance, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which at the beginning of Clinton's administration seems very supportive of the plan. Within a year's time, they're actually turning against the plan because the idea is that, of course, it's hurting business to force them to have to buy health care. You have all other kinds of countervailing geopolitical concerns. You have international issues in Bosnia. You have other issues that are happening in Somalia and Haiti. And, of course, lowering the deficit takes priority on the minds of many of the Democrats in the party at the time. So all of this basically makes it extraordinarily difficult for Clinton to get anything done in his first 2 years. And as we, of course, then know, the Republicans ride right into the Congress in a very short amount of time, showing in a lot of ways the ephemeral nature of these kinds of majorities.
So as you look back at all of this history, does a president tend to get more done when his party controls both houses of Congress or when he has to work with the other party?
Well, if you look at Barack Obama's attempt to get health care through, right, it was an interesting move because he also had these Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate. But he basically used a, you know, conservative idea, right? The American Enterprise Institute's, or is it the Heritage Foundation?
Heritage Foundation.
Thank you. The Heritage Foundation's health care plan, in the hope that that would get the votes necessary to kind of move the thing along. And there are a number of people now who look at that moment and say, well, Obama was at least able to get through the most conservative health care plan that the American voters would accept, right? I mean, so, you know, it's interesting to think about the use of Democratic majorities in this instance to kind of put forward Republican ideas. And of course, as we know, Obama suffered pushback from the outset from Boehner and other conservatives in the House anyway, even though he was using a right-wing plan.
And I would say, Jeremy, that just flat out, if you counted up the important pieces of legislation, yes, it really does help to have a majority in both houses of your own party. That said, if we look at the example of Franklin D. Roosevelt and we look at the example of Lyndon Johnson, they burned through that popularity pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Also, a lot depends on the dexterity of the president. Lyndon Johnson and FDR, among all presidents, I would say, were real masters of negotiation and deal making with Congress.
Well, right now we have the person who says he's the best negotiator and best deal maker. So let's see.
The proof is in the pudding.
And I'll also say that in both Roosevelt's case and Johnson's case, they needed to depend on some Republicans. And I think our deal maker in chief is going to learn pretty quickly that if he's not going to do business with the Democrats, he's really going to be raked over the coals by those factions within his own party.
Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the public radio podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.